Welcome to the Musician's Venture Podcast. This is a podcast focused on lessons learned via the musician's backstory, as well as building successful careers in the business. My name is Allison M., and I'll be interviewing artists and industry experts and offering insights based on events Wisconsin Music Ventures has produced. Let's get down to business. Welcome to the episode today featuring my friend here, Vinny Marini. I am so glad to have you as a guest on the show today. Vinny is a manager and promoter for shows for musicians themselves, and you do a lot of other things in the music business. So welcome, Vinny. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Allison. I appreciate your asking.
Yeah.
So can you... Since we've chatted.
It has, actually. I mean, as I was thinking about that on my way here, texting you madly as I was trying to navigate the crazy traffic, but I always love when we catch up, and I'm just so grateful that we did meet. And but can you give me and give the audience a little bit more of a picture of what exactly you do currently in the music scene?
Well, let's start with the thing that I've been doing for the longest, and that's music on the couch, which tonight is my 596th episode.
Wow.
Started on February 10th, 2010. So we'll be starting the 13th season in a couple of weeks.
That's amazing.
And it's been on Blog Talk Radio that whole time. But as of the February 6th episode, I'm moving to a brand new radio network called True Grit Radio Network.
Wow.
Which has been created by a friend of mine, Jonathan Oogie Richards, out of Austin, Texas. I'm actually going to be, my shows are going to be part of the soft launch. The full station will launch, in full sometime later on this spring, but they wanted me to get going as soon as possible. So that's pretty cool. It's going to make it easier for people to hear the show. We have an app that you can go onto your app store and you can just look for True Grit Radio Network and you can download the app and it'll be right there on your phone. We're just working out a few things about the recording of the show so that there'll be archives. It's one of the little things we have to sort of navigate.
Yeah. Good for you. And I'll ask you a little bit more about that transition in a few moments here. But besides music on the couch, you have your hands in a lot of other different jars here.
For about 8 years, I've been Taz Crew's manager. I started booking him, managing him, and trying to continue to build his career. And it's been a lot of fun. I do promotional work and I've done a lot of one-off projects for a lot of bands across the last few years. Just trying to keep my hands in things and trying to see where I might be of best help to the musicians. Some of the things I've done have been complete failures, you know, I mean, unfortunately, not complete failures, but they haven't worked as well as I would have hoped and as well as my clients would have hoped. But, so doing that, and once I first moved to Florida back in late 2019, I started putting on shows here in the Hudson area, which is on the Nature Coast. I put on 3 shows, and then pandemic shut us down. Place that I was doing shows didn't really want to get back into it. I have found a community theater, a community playhouse.
Huh.
They actually have 2 theaters. One is 370 seats, and one is 150 seats. And already scheduled 2 shows. The first one is March 13th, Women of the Blues. It's Anika Chambers, Terry Adabi, Paul Delorier, JP Soares. They're doing a set at the Bonita Blues Festival that Friday. They're coming up to Hudson to do twice as long of a set for us on Sunday. And then on April 3rd, John Primer is going to be here. One of the originals, you know, played with Muddy, toured the world with Memphis Slim fingers crossed that with the pandemic and everything that people will come out. There's not a lot of music like this in this area. You have to go to Tampa, an hour away, St. Pete, you know, 45, 50 minutes away.
And what part of Florida are you in again?
This is the West Coast. It's about 45, 50 minutes above St. Pete. It's called the Nature Coast. Suncoast is Tampa, then we're the Nature Coast. It's Hudson, Spring Hill, Pasco County, Hernando County, Citrus County, the three counties that are in the area. Most of the people that live up here are full-timers. They're not snowbirds. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this theater, you know, has been around for 40 years and they do all sorts of plays and whatnot. And they really haven't done a lot of music. So I'm hoping to break that one in with them. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Great. That's really great.
Keep the balls in the air. Keep going. You know what it's like. You just
keep
looking for something else to find a way.
Right. And if you are the one who is continuing to do something and stay active during this craziness, you're going to be at the forefront while everyone else is still trying to catch up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly hope, you know, that we can get this off the right footing. And again, you know, with the surge, again, it's a little bit nerve wracking, but they just did a comedy show in their 150 seat theater and it was packed. So, okay. You know, I mean, I'm going to be in the big theater.
Okay.
I'm doing my shows in the big theater. I need 200 people for me not to go into the poorhouse.
right. I hear you on that. Yeah, well, good for you. That's exciting. So
if it works, it works. It'll be a lot of fun. So
yeah. I can't wait. Let me know how it goes. I want to find out how.
I will.
And when is the first show?
March 13th.
Okay.
March 13th. Yeah.
Nice. And so most of the work that you do right now is centered around the blues industry.
Yes.
So how did you get into that part of the music world?
Well, the blues found me when I was 17, 18.
Yeah.
The Allman Brothers album, second Allman Brothers album came out. There's a song on it called Hoochie Coochie Man, written by somebody named W. Dixon.
Okay.
And now there was a Dixon who was one of the roadies, but it wasn't a W. I thought the song was really cool. I didn't know who the hell wrote it. I ended up in the library.
Huh.
Brick buildings, you know.
Yeah.
The card files, you know.
Oh, yeah. I was on the tail end of that.
No, I was right in the middle of it. Yeah. And the librarian came over at one point and said, son, you know, you've been looking through these card files for a while. Can I help you? And I explained what I was looking for. And she said, come here. And she showed me Willie Dixon.
Huh.
So that sort of got me into, you know, finding out the blues and finding the blues. You know, I knew at about 13, I couldn't sing, couldn't play an instrument.
Yeah.
Totally useless.
But you tried, huh?
I tried. So I learned how to play the turntables.
Nice.
And then I became a DJ. I wanted to be involved in the music. So I, not scratched turntables, but just playing music. But I found a way to mix songs so that the segues were almost impossible to tell where one song started mm-hmm. and another one mm-hmm. ended. That's sort of like the things I like to do. And when I got to college, my first dance on campus, I walked into the radio station, said, I want to do a radio show. They said, can you be here at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon? I said, sure. I got a half hour worth of training and I was on the air at 4:00. Let's see, right at the end of my show, somebody walked in the studio when the light was on and I turned around and said, what the f- are you doing? And at the end, the guy, the director of the station said, really like what you did, except for the last 5 minutes. We were only carrier current at that point, which meant we went through the electrical system at the school.
Huh.
So everything had this behind it.
Oh, man.
A 60 cycle hum.
Oh, my gosh.
By the time I was a sophomore, we had gone FM, and I was part of that turnover. And I did it until the day before I left RIT. I did my last show. I worked as a wedding DJ for a number of years and found ways to play the Grateful Dead during dinner hour or things like that during the dinner hour, just to mix things up. I just always enjoyed playing music, and Music on the Couch started like 10 years ago, 2010, 12 years ago. I was doing written interviews.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I'm writing interviews, I'm trying to, you know, do quotes, and I'm realizing I'm coloring what I'm writing and it's just really hard. So
right.
I said, geez. Yeah. I was doing a comedy show on Blog Talk Radio with a friend of mine, and I would bring on musicians. And so I said, I'm going to start this. And I wanted it to be just me talking to musicians. My first few shows, it was me and one person. They were 30 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And then I went to two people and it was an hour long. And then it became shit. Let's go 3 hours and go four people. But after I did my first IBC and I got a lot more privilege from Blog Talk Radio, I was able to do 3 hours and we went to four people and that we've been doing it, you know, tonight is 596.
Yeah.
600 show is scheduled for February 21st. Still haven't figured out what I'm going to do. I have no idea if I'm going to just do a regular show and not say a word. You know, I don't know. There was a big celebration for my 250th show in Memphis 1 year.
Yeah.
When I was doing my live shows there. And I am moving to a new platform, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
Triggered Radio Network. It'll be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm also going to do a regular music show. And when Jonathan asked me if I wanted to do that, I said, yeah, but I'm going to play whatever I want. And he said, I hope so. And I said, dude, I got 80,000 songs, pop, classical, Christian. I've got it all.
Yeah.
And if it makes sense in a set, I'm going to play it. If it makes sense to do it. And that's sort of what True Grit's going to be about, what the radio network is going to be about. It's going to be about breaking the barriers. I'm going to be one of the two true blues shows on the station. The rest
like
of a lot of it's going to be country, outlaw country.
Yeah.
Lot of different, you know, a lot of different genres of the country, a lot of different genres of blues. So it's all going to work out together. They all intersect.
Mm-hmm.
They all intersect anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, absolutely. No, and that sounds great. And what is it that inspired this move to a different platform?
Well, Jonathan came and asked me if I wanted to, and
yeah.
We've been friends forever. He was up in the Seattle area. He moved to Austin 3 years ago. And one day he reached out and he said, look, I got this new platform I want to do. He said, no, you're my first person I'm asking. I want you to be on. So I said, yeah, great. Let's
wow.
do it. It's a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit different to coordinate the live show with being able to deal with Skype. And I'm going to have to use a program called Mix and then their platform and kind of mix all three of them together. Whereas with what I'm doing now is I just log on to my site and it's all right there for me. So I've been practicing. I've got couple of training sessions over the next 2 weeks. Hopefully I won't S the bed on February 7th when we do that first show. You know, we'll go from there. I mean, look, it's always been live. And one of the reasons I've always wanted it to be live was because I felt that there's more of a spontaneity to it. I feel like people tend to be a little bit more open and I don't want to sit there and edit words because that's why I didn't want to do written articles.
Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. I hear you on that. It's when it's raw, there's something powerful about that. Definitely. Yeah. So what were you doing in between the time when you were, you know, at the turntable and, you know, mixing things and then between that and when you started music on the couch?
I graduated RIT with the degree in print management, which no longer exists because the printing industry is pretty much dead. and I worked in advertising and marketing my whole career.
Yeah. For music publications or
No. I did all kinds of, I did everything from Gatorade to Atlas Copco building machines, Otis Elevator. I mean, I did all different types of brands. I did annual reports. I did billboards, out of home stuff, magazine ads, direct mail. Some of my most creative pieces were direct mail that we would be doing for AT&T. And there was a lot of die cutting and a lot of interesting different things. And that was my specialty. Mm-hmm. When they would say, we want something really strange. Let's go see if Vinny can put something through the metal for us. Metal being the printing press. And it's just the way different folds and whatnot. And that's what that's where I was, both in New York, New Jersey and Boston.
Okay. Nice. And how long were you doing that?
I started when I was 21. I spent a few years in printing plant in two printing plants, managing two printing plants, but I got laid off my last job when I was 56 and I could not find a job. So I ended up retiring at 62. And that's when I really started dealing with more of the music's kind of stuff in the background.
Okay.
I was doing some freelance work and whatnot, but then I realized I was living in Mississippi. I would have had to move. Mm-hmm. No one wanted to move a 57-year-old whose wife wasn't coming with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it was. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, get to a point in your life where people, you become, you know, they'd rather hire a young kid.
Right. Right. But you found kind of a new career for yourself in that time period.
Yeah. It brought me back to what I love, which is the music.
Yeah.
Music has always been, you know, I have a soundtrack going on in my brain at all times. I mean, something happens and I can hear a song that relates to what's happening in my world. It's just who I am. The insanity in my brain.
Yeah. Oh man. What's the soundtrack today?
Soundtrack today is I'd like to get healthy.
Oh man. Yeah. We were just talking before this that you.
Yeah. And just catching up. It's just been losing 4 days. I mean, I didn't turn my computer on for 2 days.
Oh man.
That's unusual for me.
Well, thanks for muddling through and being here today.
And the theme from Friends, you know, you got to have friends.
Yes. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how did you get more specifically into artist management? I'll ask you a couple follow-up questions to that after I hear your answer, but how did that happen?
I met Taz Crew during the IBC in Memphis, Tennessee, again, back in 2014, 15, somewhere in there. And we talked and he said, you know, hey, would you like to, you know, help me out?
Mm-hmm.
I want to do more than I'm doing right now. And I said, sure. And it was very, very informal the first couple of years. You know, I was trying to book him as much as possible. And then we formalized it somewhere down the line, that I would be I would manage him, especially since we took on a booking agent. And the way I take a percentage of all of his gigs, no matter whether I book it or someone else books it, percentage just changes on who books it. So that's basically how that all started with him. And then, you know, other people came to me, you know, knowing me through Music on the Couch and the like, and seeing what I was doing with him, came to me and said, hey, can you help me with this? Can you help me with that? And, like I said, individual projects. Yeah. I'm trying to stay a little bit more focused right now, especially with the promotion of the shows here. That's definitely taking up a lot of time too. As you know, I mean, you promote a lot of shows. I mean, it takes up a lot of time to get this.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you want to do it well and do it in a particular way and with your brand and everything.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So can you just describe to me what an artist and manager relationship is like to you?
It's a partnership. It's a partnership between, you know, the manager and the artist to increase the artist's awareness out in the public, happens to take. If it means going out and finding a booking agent, if it means working with them to try to get music licensed, that's part of it. To just oversee the overall branding, make sure the branding is right. This year, we've dropped "And His Tortured Souls" from Taz's title. It used to be Taz Crew and His Band of Tortured Souls. Mm-hmm. It's now just Taz Crew. We've made some changes. It needed to be done. I've had to call a couple of venues that we've got booked, even though I sent them posters, even though the contract says Taz Crew and it says new billing, booked Taz Crew and His Band of Tortured Souls. I was like, no, you got to take that down. We don't want people to think that some of those members of that band are going to be there, because they're not. And it's just, it's a whole new, just again, it's the branding. It's, you know, it's all about branding and making sure that your branding is consistent. Making sure your artist is represented in the correct way, trying to find new ways to get them exposure, whether that's interviews, you know, continuing to go after the big boys on the block, the big festivals and whatnot, and continuing to try to push.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And have you enjoyed your role as a manager?
Yeah, I have. I have. It's, I mean, yeah, there's a hole right here on my wall. I won't show you from where I've banged my head a few times. it's not always the most pleasant thing in the world. I mean, you know, it's sometimes, you know, you, there are times when there are issues and you've got to deal with them. You know, for the most part, I mean, I love Taz. I love what he does. I love the music he creates. I have to like, the artists I'm working with, just like on Music on the Couch. I will not book an artist unless I like their music.
Yeah.
Unless I feel something from their music.
That's a great rule of thumb. Yeah. Yeah.
The tagline has always been musicians you should know.
Yeah.
And basically I'm saying, these are my recommendations. You know, I've expanded that to now live, uncut, and uncensored conversations with musicians you should know. Uncensored does not mean that we drop the F-bomb. It just means that anything is open for discussion.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Love it. And what about your work in promotion? Did you also get started in that kind of after your work in the advertising world and things like
that? Yeah, it all kind of just flowed. You know, people said, you know, I did a, one year I did a promotion for festivals and I had about six or seven, actually about eight or nine clients. And I built up, I built them an EPK on my website. I did a mailing to all the festival list, 300 plus festivals that I have in the United States, for each of them individually. And each email went in individually so that I didn't go, I didn't use, I mean, I do have you know, a MailChimp program. A lot of the time that stuff goes into spam. You put a lot of BCCs, it goes into spam. So for each artist, I would send 300 emails three times.
Wow.
You know, original and then two follow-ups.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's so it was a lot of work. A couple of the artists got work. A couple of them didn't. Those that didn't were not happy. I'm sorry. I did what I said I was going to do. That's all you can do. And like I said, I felt bad about it. You know, I did a couple of things for a couple of those people because I felt like I owed them a little bit more. So that's my downfall. I've given away a lot of my time and energy for very little over the years. Then things happen with people and all of a sudden they forget who you are. And that's that's frustrating.
How has that played out for you? Do you mind sharing a little bit?
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, I started with an artist who was, you know, just starting out and I gave them a deal, you know, almost 70% off of what I would normally charge and everything. And they're out there killing it right now and nothing's going on. You know, I've got a friend who's hired a representative who be good, Vinny. Be good. I think if you're going to be a promotion person, you have to be on social media. And if you have a promotion person not on social media, I'm not sure what they're doing for you. And if you then turn around and spend a shitload of money on them, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
When they're friends of yours.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know what you do. So I'm not trying to complain. I'm really not. It's just, those are the frustrating things you come across. There are, you know, there are a lot of people in the music business, all genres, who will take, and never, ever give.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
And my problem is I give more than I take. I never was in this to make $1 billion. I never, you know, it's not going to happen. But I've I've gotten smarter over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, especially because that's when I was doing a lot of things for people during the pandemic, because I knew they didn't have a lot of money.
Right. Right.
And, you know, then all of a sudden they go out and they hire someone else to do something that I was doing for them and paying them the regular rate. So you just do what you do.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's, we've gone through similar things too. Mm-hmm. And all you can really say is, you know, just keep doing what you know is right and you feel is right. And, you know, what goes around comes around usually. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Hey, it's a fun business. It can bring you a lot of enjoyment. It can bring you a lot of new friends.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at one.
Absolutely.
And just like any other business, it can also make you want to bang your head against the wall.
Yeah. And, you know, in what we do, we work with a lot of artists that are kind of at that mid-range level where they're starting to think about getting management or working with promoters more and things like that. What kind of advice might you give them in doing so? You know, is it, you know, because it's possible for the artists to do a lot of that themselves.
Sure.
At what point do you think it's worth looking into hiring someone to do that?
Just, I think when you get to a point where you're, maybe you're missing out on gigs. Because you missed a message somewhere along the line,
right.
You know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
You look in your spam folder and you find out that there was a request for an interview, you know, from some publication that was a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's real hard to write back and say, hey, your email was in spam and I'd never check spam, but I'd love to do an interview.
Right.
It's just I think when it starts to get too much for you, I get calls often from people saying, you know, are you available? And right now I just can't take on anybody else because I don't have the time to do it. And if I can't put in the time, I'd ask questions about the people you're talking to, that you're looking into, talk to some of their clients, talk to some of their past clients.
Yes.
And find out why they're past clients.
Yes.
And it could be totally mutual. It's, you know, it's no big deal, but, you know, ask the questions. Just like anything else, you know, you don't just walk in and say, hey, I'm buying your house. Do your due diligence. You're about to hand your career into the hands of somebody, not 100%, but you're giving over a lot of who you are. And giving them a lot of responsibility to take care of who you are as an artist.
Yeah.
So do due diligence.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that might mean, you know, often people are, you know, if they're at that point where they're missing out on gigs, they're missing out on stuff. And so they feel like kind of very time sensitive, in the time crunch to hire someone, it might make them not really research as much, but really, yeah, like you said, take the time. It's going to be worth it in the long run.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, you know, anytime any big purchase.
Right. That's true.
You do research.
That's true. Yeah.
Is your career not a big purchase?
It's only everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we met, at a blues festival over the summer, and really got in touch more after the festival, but, and I'd like your perspective on the blues as an industry. I was there to kind of, learn from Paul Benjamin, who was running the festival.
Right.
And then I got to meet a couple other people along the way. And I remember him saying, you know, the blues as a whole is kind of, you know, the audience is getting older and older. Do you see, I mean, what is your take on that?
You just have to look at the audience. It is older.
Yeah.
It is whiter. Why? I don't know. Part of it is that some of the programmers program more toward that
demographic, or
thank you.
Okay,
that demographic. Thank you very much. I mean, they program their festivals toward it. Some festivals, you know, Paul does a great job of, you know, diversifying his festivals, but it's still basically a lot of a white audience. It's that's the conundrum we've run into, and over the last 2 years, it's become, the divide has become even wider in some cases, because of everything else that's gone on in the world and in this country, and with the racial divide. So it's I think when you, people say, well, where are the people who aren't at the blues festivals? I think you find them at Southern Soul festivals. All it is a name. It's just marketing, you know, it's just branding. You know, you could call those blues festivals, but they don't. You know, it's, in some ways, things are getting a little bit better as we continue, as we get back out there, as discussions continue to happen. And we can only hope that they continue to get better. And we try to bring in more young people. I mean, one of the things at the International Blues Challenge in Memphis, which is normally this week, is now going to be in May, the youth showcase, and watching some of the youth who are there. A couple of weeks ago, I had a gentleman on named Pierce Dipner. He's just 20 years old. I met him when he was 14, and he's just now got his first album out. There's so a lot of musicians that I've met, you know, there who are continuing. Some don't play the blues anymore. A couple of great young guitarists I know went country. We have to continue to try to bring the youth in as much as possible. That's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did have the pleasure of meeting Fernando Jones. Do you know him?
Fernando out of Chicago. I don't know him, but I know he runs his camp in Chicago.
For kids.
Generation Blues, and with the Blues Foundation. That's one of the camps that they send their Generation Blues kids to. There's that. Yeah. There's one in Clarksdale. And you know, they really give them that they're working with some of the best in the business.
So hopefully we can get a few more people involved in the blues scene. So I was really was completely blown away by the acts at the festival in Maine, and it was just so much fun being there and being behind the scenes. And it was a very diverse group of artists, and I was completely blown away. I can't say enough about it. And I will definitely be a forever blues fan after that. So
Paul does a great job with that festival, plus the others that he books for.
He's
involved in a couple of others, but then there are festivals that hire him just to book for them.
Yeah.
He does a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I learned so much from that. So that's great. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've come across in the music industry?
Just getting known.
Yeah.
Getting known is the biggest one, you know? I mean, getting that door to open the first time, you know? I mean, whether it's trying to talk to for Music on the Couch, whether it was trying to get some of the record labels to start sending me music, to take me serious in the beginning. For, you know, booking, trying to get clubs to answer your phone calls, your emails, you know, the fact that they step over you in front of their front door because you've been laying there all night waiting for them to come in, you know, whatever you have to do. It's just being noticed. And as an artist, it's being noticed. You know, same thing with an artist, being noticed, doing something a little different than everybody else.
Yeah.
Not sounding like everybody else. I've got a good friend who you met in Maine, Mick Colasa, who coined the phrase uncovering a song. Mm. You don't cover a song. You change it. Make it your own. You uncover a song.
That's brilliant.
You know, it's and you know, it's that's the kind of thing. You know, if you take a song, you just do it note for note. Okay, great, that's wonderful. But if you can take a song that everybody in the world knows, and it takes them a couple of stanzas to realize what song you're playing, that's uncovering a song.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. And I do want to mention again, I think I gave you a shout out on social media some time ago, but when Taz came out with his new album, you know, you sent me a copy of it and I wasn't expecting that. And I think that's really something important to do, is to, you know, get the music out there if you can physically to people, especially when they're not expecting it, because it becomes very memorable that way.
We put together a short list of people who we felt that we wanted to make sure we had the music was in their hands, because we felt that they were important and we wanted to make sure that, you know, they knew what we were doing.
Yeah, that was so nice. And yeah, I mean, and that just entices me to become a big follower of his and yours. And yeah.
And we got a show in Montana in August. And when I call you and say, where can we play up there in your area?
Oh, yeah.
You'll give us all those names so I can,
exactly,
start booking that, I can start booking that routing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And yeah. My point is that people remember those little things, mm-hmm, sure, that really doesn't take too much time, but it can really turn into a very big and important relationship and lots of opportunities. So yeah, I think that's really important, and that's something a lot of people could learn from. So thank you for doing that.
Sure.
It made me feel special.
that's why we did it.
Exactly. Yeah. What is maybe the greatest lesson that you've learned along the way in your career in music? Even advertising.
Be honest.
Yeah. Be honest. I like that. Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell the truth.
Yeah.
Even if they don't want to hear it, be honest.
You know, yeah.
I had someone send me, you know, here's some videos of me and, you know, what do you think? And, you know, this person thinks very highly of themselves. And I wrote him back and I said, you know, I kind of like your music. It's hard to tell because the sound on the videos, it's all cell phone. Mm-hmm. So it's not real good. I said, half of the scenes, your head is cut off.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're not going to get any bookings from these videos. It does nothing to help your brand.
Yeah.
The response was, sure, that's what I figured you'd say. You're some rich white guy, and what the hell do you know? I could only hope someday someone might say, you're almost rich. Because I'm like, rich is not, no one's ever said rich and Vinnie Marini in the same sentence. But, you know, I mean, you know, I just wrote back and I said, I'm sorry. I said, but you asked for my opinion. Do you want me to lie to you and say it's the best thing since the Beatles?
Yeah.
The best thing since the Beatles.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And, you know, I think from something like that, they may not realize it right away, but down the line, that's going to be important advice that just came from you. So it hurts to hear at first, but I think they'll value that eventually. So, yeah. Yeah. But it's, I think it is important to be honest. Well, it's always important to be honest, sure, like you said, sometimes brutally honest, because it does no one any favors if you don't return any information to them. Especially if they're looking, you know, they're explicitly looking for that from you, that he's reached out to you specifically. And, and wanted that feedback. So, I mean, you could just say not interested right now, or didn't really pique my interest, or something very vague like that. Or you could give them something that could help them.
I was trying to be helpful. Yeah. You know, I said, you know, if you want to get noticed, I said, get somebody to film one of your shows. You know, take the sound off the board, you know, spend a couple of dollars and have them put together. I mean, it's not that hard to do. I mean, I've done it in iMovie.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I've taken a 3-camera shoot and I've put a 3-camera shoot together where it's seamless. used one soundtrack and dropped the other two soundtracks and just kept it all, you know, and put it all together and made my marks and it all hit. I said, you know, it's what you need to do. People don't want to see crappy cell phone videos.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when we have so much other great technology at our disposal. It just doesn't make sense anymore. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great advice right there. Have you had like a favorite event or experience in music since you've been working in it?
Since I've been working in it. The festival this summer was great. I mean, I was MC for the 50th Ann Arbor Blues Fest, which was a huge honor.
Nice.
You know, Grateful Dead Capitol Theater 1982. You know, I mean, I've got a lot of concert. A lot of great shows that I've seen over the years. Getting to see, you know, going to the IBC and seeing musicians from all over the world, and seeing all the different flavors of the blues that they're playing from all over the world. IBC is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I tell anybody, you know, spend the week, go down there, just enjoy, have a good time.
Is it always in the same place?
It's all down Beale Street. It's in like 20 clubs. It happens in 20 different clubs across the week, all culminating in the finals at the Orpheum Theater.
Wow.
So, wow. You know, it's 250 band solo duos, you know, starting out. Everybody plays the first 2 days. They cut it down to the top eight from each club for Friday night. And then they take the top eight bands and top eight solo duo acts for the finals.
Wow.
And it's all based on judges' scores, based on criteria that's laid out. It's not a competition. It's not one band against the other. It's a challenge for each act to be the best that they can be for 20 minutes. Because that's all it is.
Wow.
The set is 20 minutes. And it's timed. And if you go over, you lose points.
Wow.
And if you go too short, you lose points. And if you don't play blues, you lose points. And if you don't announce you're doing a cover, you lose points. I mean, there's a lot of rules.
Oh my gosh.
You can go over to blues.org, click on their International Blues Challenge page, find the rules, read the rules.
Yeah.
Anybody that ever wants to go down there, the fun thing that we always laugh about is there's always at least one band who's coming in, who they're the best band in their town of 500, and they're going to just kill. They're the best band everybody just can't, and they get there and they go, WTF. Oh my God. You know, there's bands, you know, from all around the country, around the world, not this year, but most every other year. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You have definitely gotten me curious about it, so I'm going to check it out. I heard about it, but I didn't know the intricacies about it, like you just described with the
and it's,
rules.
And the whole week is more of a convention. There are, you know, there are they do seminars. They started speed dating, where they have people of different agents, promoters, whatnot, and you go, and the musicians can go and spend 10 minutes, and then the bell rings and you move on to the next one. You get to ask the questions and things like that. So you've got the youth showcase acts, that's the same week they give away the Keeping the Blues Alive awards every year. So there's a lot that goes on. And the city of Memphis's brain's exploding because it's normally in January, and then you've got Memphis in May, which is a big music festival along the Mississippi River, all kinds of music genre. And the Blues Music Awards are also in May. Well, now they're moving the IBC. So you're going to have one weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Memphis in May. The next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday is IBC, and the BMAs are Thursday.
Wow.
So, you know, and honestly, The IBC is in January because when Blues Foundation years ago went to the Beale Street Merchants Association and said, we want to do this. Will you help us? They said, yeah, you have to have it in January because we don't get any business in January. Oh, we're dead in January. The streets are dead in January. Yeah. So if you want to have it, you want to have it. I'm sure the merchants aren't real thrilled that they're jamming three huge events into a week and a half now.
But,
you know, it's got to be, something's got to be, if they don't do it, then they have to cancel it for a second year in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, hey, it'll be power fun. To them for, yeah, for making it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So. Wow. That sounds like such a trip. So, man, I will get on that mailing list. Okay. And then is there...
And folks, the Blues Foundation, which is the worldwide umbrella, $25 for the year to become a member.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to vote in the Blues Music Awards. You get to vote for the Blues Grammys.
Oh, my gosh.
It only costs you $25 a year.
So, definitely worth getting involved with. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, thanks to do my little plug.
Yeah. No, thank you for letting us know about that. And yeah, those are the majority of the questions that I had. I mean, what do you have that you're looking forward to right now, Vinny?
My shows, that are coming up, making both the live shows that I'm promoting and then making the transition on Music on the Couch.
Yeah, that's a big
deal. Looking forward to Nervous as Hell. in all instances. So, you know, I mean, if we sell 100 tickets to these live shows, it ain't going to be pretty.
Yeah.
It ain't going to be pretty. So, you know, I'm, you know, knock wood that, you know, we're making the right moves and we're doing the right things, and just keep, you know, one step in front of the other. It's all you can do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I have a couple suggestions on how I can probably help, but we can talk about that afterwards. Sure. And but yeah, I'm really excited for you for these things. And is there anything that we didn't discuss here that you might like to bring up?
No, I think, I mean, you did. Done a good damn job here, girl.
Well, thank you, my friend.
You touched on all the bases. I mean, I think it's, you know, again, I think what people just have to understand is, and especially in the middle class musicians, as I like to call them, those musicians who are out on the road 200 days a year, not filling the big arenas, doing small clubs, these people have been off and not. The service industry, everybody talks about the service industry and the restaurants have been killed, but they've been open. Mm-hmm. Music has been shut. The arts have been shut. Not just music, the arts, plays, whatever it is. Your favorite musician, go over to their website, check out their music. You don't have one of their albums, buy it. Right. A lot of musicians now have tip jars on their website. Drop $5 in it from your Venmo account or your PayPal account. Mm-hmm. Help them out, because these people have lost their jobs for the last 24 months.
Yeah.
And they're losing them again.
Yeah.
So that's all. Support the arts more than ever, because it's been hurt more than anything by this pandemic.
Absolutely. And it's going to be real tough to come back from right now. Yeah. And something that I've seen a little bit of is some of these musicians at the level that you're speaking of have had to find jobs in other industries. And some of them are realizing how easy it is to make money in other ways.
I'm making three times what I was making a musician. I'm home every night with my kids. I'm not driving in a van for 15 hours with four smelly guys.
Right.
I know at least three musicians who are no longer musicians, and they were all at the top of that middle-class musician level. And it's a sin, but.
And it, yes. And so we're just letting that talent just go because there's no other way to keep them. We've just made it really impossible to be a working musician, but, But those of us who know, who are here, you know, as long as we keep advocating for it, and those of us who can support them as much as possible, remind them how much we need them, you know, we can only do as much as that. But yes, tell them if you can to get back out there and play, because the world needs them. Yeah. And we need the inspiration, you know, for the next generation.
You know, the venues have to be able to make it safe for the musicians, for the fans, for their staff. I mean, we have to find, you know, with the weather, it is what it is. When the weather gets warmer, we'll be back outside again, and we'll be doing more shows again. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. It's just, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pandemic.
I know. What a strange time in history. So, well, Vinny, let's end on a slightly more positive note here. So where can we find out more information about you and Music on the Couch and Taz Crew?
TazCrew.com, TASCRU.com. Mm-hmm. Music on the Couch is musiconthecouch.com. Also on Facebook, BarrelHouseTalent.com. Also on Facebook. That's me.
That's your stuff. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, and Taz is obviously also on Facebook. Go over, check him out on YouTube. Subscribe to his YouTube channel, Taz Crew, on YouTube. Yeah.
Great stuff.
And I appreciate you. I appreciate everything you do. I watch. I'm quiet in the background, but I see you. You're a huge proponent for the music.
Yeah.
And all. And we appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you. And right back at you. Thank you so much, Vinny, for being a guest here today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Broke down. Busted up. Rattling bone, near the heap of dust. Mountain edge, river rust. Broke down, busted up. Broke down, busted up. Was a time, now long ago, I was so happy, how them good times roll. Devil he come, gave him my soul. Where my heart well, now an empty hole.
There was a time.
So long ago,
lived
a happy life. Let the good times roll, temptation come. I wasn't tough enough. I'm all broke down and busted up. Broke down, busted up, rattling bones, near the heap of dust, mountain edge, river rust. Broke down, busted up, broke down, busted up.
Tell her how poorly I lived my final days. Yes, should I go to my evermore? Just lay me here. My baby's ghost, and she told me she'd had enough. I'm all broke down and busted up. Broke down, busted up, rattling bones, neath a heap of dust,
heap of dust,
mountain ash, river rust. Broke down, busted up, broke down, busted up, rattling bones, neath a heap of dust. Down and busted up, busted up, busted up, busted up.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you'll leave ratings and reviews for us wherever you're listening from. Visit themusiciansventure.com for more information on upcoming guests, show notes, and ways to send us your topic suggestions. The Musicians Venture podcast is hosted by Allison M., recorded at Podcast Town in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, produced by Shannon Coulard, with theme music written and performed by Mike Neumeier. Thanks again.